Accession number 31408.
John Shoebridge, Real One. Can you tell me when and where you were born?
Yes, I was born in Cosham on the 11th of October, Cosham, that's Portsmouth, 11th of October 1922.
And what kind of family were your parents? What did your father do?
My father had been a lieutenant in the Great War. He won the MC during the war, and my mother had been a nursing sister in, I believe, one of the London hospitals. And at the time, I believe my father was an estate agent and mother was then, well, a housewife. Later on, my father joined the Daily Telegraph. But
as a journalist?
As a journalist, yes, that's right.
So there was a service tradition in your family, was there great emphasis on that, or was your father?
No.
Did he talk much about his experience in the Great War?
No, he didn't. No. Very, very little indeed. Very little.
Do you know how he won his MC?
No. My sister, who lives in Canada, and myself are endeavouring to find out with the aid of the War Museum or something like that in London at this moment. We believe it was in 1916. My nephew in Canada has the MC now. I had it. And we think it was at Vimy Ridge, possibly in the connection with the saving of some mules. Father was a lieutenant in the Royal Artillery. But other than that, I don't really know at this moment.
Okay. So you grow up into this, I mean, middle-class family. You go to what kind of school?
I went to a public school for 3 years, Portsmouth Grammar School. And then my parents moved up into Surrey, mainly because my father was working in London at that time. And I then went to, it was another grammar school, but it wasn't a public school, in Woking, in Surrey, where I did my general school cert and matriculation.
Well, I mean, this would be now in the 30s, wouldn't it? How were you conscious of the growing threat in coming from Germany? You were 14, 15, probably you were more interested in things that...
I think one was, really, yes. From, say, 1935 or 6, one was, yes.
In what way?
Well, what you read in the newspapers, really. They are next, as I recall, they are next to Rhineland first, and then I think Austria was the next one, wasn't it?
So in 1938, when you would have been 16?
I would have been 16 in October the 11th, yes, 38. Yeah. Oh, I was well aware of it by then. Oh, yes.
You went on to become a pilot. Did you develop this interest because, I mean, how were you conscious of aviation? What drew you to it? And what was your first experience of seeing a plane fly?
My first experience was probably when we were in Portsmouth, when Sir Alan Cobham, who you may have heard of, his son Sir Michael Cobham, I met at Yeovilton about 6 years ago in the connection with the Mack ships, the model of the Empire McAlpine, which was the first Mack ship which I served in, and was unveiled then. But in 1936 we had a Tiger Moth, or Tiger Moths, used to put the air display on at Portsmouth, and bomb motor cars with bags of flour. And that's my first experience, yeah.
And did you think then, God, I really must...
No, I was really more interested in becoming a schoolmaster. And I would have thought probably history would have been my favourite subject.
So you, with 36, 38, you're 16, what age did you do your matriculation, Julie?
That would have been 39, would have been June 39, yes.
So period then, just before the outbreak of war, you're in Portsmouth and then suddenly war's declared.
No, I was in Woking then.
We moved up
to Woking then.
So what was your... when war broke out, what do you remember of that?
Oh, very well. I can remember the Neville Chamberlain making his speech on that Sunday. And, well, we were all, won't say frightened, but we were certainly, but very perturbed indeed, I think, about the whole setup, yeah.
And you were of an age where you knew that if it came to the crunch, you could well be called up.
Oh, yes, indeed. That didn't really worry one in those days. You know, you were 17, 18, 20, 21, 20, you're immortal then.
What did your parents, say anything about it, when the fact of war, the clouds of war growing over Europe?
Well, father then had moved from the Telegraph to the Daily Mail, doing a similar job. He left the Mail in about 38, and he and a friend started a travel agency called Bradley's, I believe, in London. It was beginning to be a bit successful in a mini Thomas Cook way, but it could have been, I think. But, of course, the war came and that killed it stone dead. So father then was unemployed, basically, but he rejoined the army in 1940 as a lieutenant. And he served in the army in a non... Well, he was in the army, but not in the fighting front line.
He would have been what, I suppose, then? A very old man, over 40?
As far as I'm concerned, a very old man, yes, indeed. And he finished up the war. He did a short stint on the Clyde, on a field battery protecting the Clyde, and then he moved into admin stuff, and he ended up at Richmond as adjutant of a training place up there, or down there, at Richmond, yeah.
So you've matriculated. It's now, say, the outbreak of war. You've just matriculated from school. What were you? What did you do next?
Well, obviously, money was a bit short in the house at that time, because father at that time had lost his job. A mother, although a qualified nursing sister, obviously was at home. So I left school a little bit early. I was going on for higher school cert, but it was agreed as the war was on, and I was going to be called up eventually anyway. I left school and got a short job at Fair Oaks Airfield, which is near Woking. It was a Tiger Moth RAF training place. I was on a clerical side in the control tower, and I did that for 12 months. That would have been from what? June 1940, May 1940, till about September 1941, when I joined up.
So that period, I mean, that's quite an interesting period that covers the Battle of Britain.
It did, yes.
And even though you were working as a clerk in a control tower, do you remember much about that?
Oh, Lord, yes. Oh, a lot. I mean, I was, you know, from the word 1938 onwards, I mean, I'd been, jokingly says he, a highly intelligent boy, and I'd been following all this really closely indeed. And when the Battle of Britain came, well, oh yes, indeed, and the fall of France and all that, I never dreamt that we would ever be invaded successfully, although when you look back on it, we had every chance of being so. I remember on the sometime in July, early July, May, you know, June, the church bells rang.
Of
our local parish church.
No, which year? June 40.
This would have been probably June 1940. Oh, in 1940. Now, that you may know was the signal that the Germans had landed in the UK. And they rang all over the UK. I remember saying to my mother, funny how these things retain your memory all those years ago. I said, Mother, the church bells have rung, and you know what that means. However, as it turned out, of course, they hadn't landed at all.
It was a false alarm.
False alarm. I joined the Home Guard, which you doubtless will have heard of course, and was issued after a month with a rifle and six rounds. And there was me at the age of, 17 would it have been? 17, yeah. And an older man who was retired. We used to march up and down about 11 o'clock at night, guarding the local village of Horsall.
Wearing a uniform.
Oh, yes, we had uniform, yes, we did. Army uniform, yes, I was.
And actually, when you were at work in the tower, how were you conscious then? It was a training squadron for
Tiger Moths, for the RAF, yeah. Well, we were bombed, actually. No, we weren't bombed, but we had a German bomber, which in August, that would have been, definitely, flew...
1940,
flew at about 300 feet over the airfield, returning from bombing London, we suspected. I remember the wing commander got on top of the airfield and opened fire with his pistol, which at this large high-call bomber, I think it was. But he didn't drop any bombs anyway. We'd all gone into a little split trench outside the control tower at that time.
And you were beginning, I suppose, to think about what you're going to do when you get called. I mean, you could be called up at the age of
18. Well, I know it might have been 19, and then I don't know. It started, I believe, at 20 and went down as time went on. But in fact, it didn't arise in my case because I think probably, in fact, yes, being at Fair Oaks, I got interested in the flying side of it. And
did you fly at all? Did anyone take you?
One of the squadron leaders in charge, he took me up in a Tiger Moth. And when I looked back, I knew nothing. I knew nothing what I was doing at all. I could have been flying an air balloon for all I was doing. Hopeless. But and I fancied the Royal Navy and the Fleet Air Arm.
Because?
Well, I suppose probably because I was born and bred in Portsmouth, and I'd always been attached to the sea and the Royal Navy. And I think the air branch possibly was a Fleet Air Arm, as it was in those days, was a more romantic concept than the RAF. If you're an RAF chap, you'll probably say that bloke's talking rubbish. But anyway, so I did, and I volunteered and was interviewed at Gosport.
How did you volunteer? What was the process?
I honestly forget. I really forget now. I think we, two of us... I went down on my own to Winchester, I believe. Anyway, I got put on a waiting list to be interviewed formally, and that took place at Gosport, in a naval place of some sort, which it was, I do not know now. Three lieutenants, I think they were, one senior one and two younger ones, all with wings on, and about 33 of us, I think, were interviewed that day, and only six got through. I remember one poor chap, he was a bit upset, but he got asthma very badly, so going to be a pilot, he had no hope at all, of course.
So this is specifically to be a pilot?
This was to be a pilot in the air branch of the Royal Navy, yes.
Not an observer? Not,
not, not an observer, no.
Had you already been tested before you went to the interview?
In what way?
For aptitude and...
No.
So you applied to be a pilot and you went straight to this...
You went straight to the interview board, yeah, and they were the ones who decided whether you got the right attitude or not. I remember them saying to me, I said, volunteer, I'd like to fly American Grumman Martlet, which that was one of their fighter planes on the carriers. They asked me to identify one or two model aeroplanes. Well, I'd been in the air cadets, so I knew all those backwards, and I do remember there was a little model of an aircraft carrier there, and there was a little metal object on there, an aeroplane. I remember picked up looking very worried and said, well, I don't know what that one is, but it might be a hurricane, I think, said I. And the lieutenant laughed loudly and said, ha, 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 we don't know what it is either. It's just a little model. Anyway, and so I was accepted.
And what other questions? Can you remember, the actual interview itself?
Well, where I'd been to school, what I was doing at the time, what games did I play? I was always being a very keen sportsman. I used to captain the school cricket team in Woking, that was. Played football, not very well. Then I kept on the school rugby at 15. And I was a very good chess player, quite different basic sport. In fact, I won the Surrey Boys Chess Championship in 1939, I think, and went down to Hastings, where they had the British Boys Congress, to play for Surrey. But I didn't do terribly well. I think out of about 36, I came about 24th. But never mind, it was a schoolmaster came down with me for a whole week, it went on. Accompany me to look after me when I was there.
And actually, you mentioned the air cadets. We didn't talk about that in the build-up to the war. Where was that?
That was in Woking. I believe we used to meet once a week or once a fortnight. Can't remember an awful lot about it. I had a uniform, though.
And this, again, would have been 39?
This would be 39 and 40 when I was at Fair Oaks. Yeah.
And the fall of France, too. How were you conscious of that? How did you know about that?
Well, it was all over the newspapers, of course. Other than that, well, no, on the radio, I suppose.
You didn't actually see any people coming back?
No. Not in Woking, no, because you know where Woking is, in the middle of Surrey. No, we didn't, no.
Saw nothing there. Well, I don't know, there's someone down in Plymouth who saw some people, and someone up in Scotland who saw people, because apparently there
were... Oh, well, Plymouth would in Scotland, would you? Yeah, Plymouth would.
It was farmed out throughout...
But, I mean, this was right in the middle exactly. of the country, really, yeah.
So, the interview, then, specific questions, what you were doing, what you were... I'm just trying to get the feel of it. I mean, were you grilled? Do have some coffee.
Yeah, sure. No, I honestly don't remember a lot about it. I remember sitting there. I remember the three blokes there. It was all very amiable, really, although as a young boy of 18, and really, it was 18, wasn't it? Yeah. It was obviously a bit formidable, really, these three mighty men.
You were in their early 20s.
Well, mid-20s, so, yeah, the old men, yeah. They were very decent, but they are... Well, they just wanted to know if you were fit and able. You did a medical while you were there as well, of course.
Do you remember anything of that?
Well, straightforward. Fairly tough medical, I suppose. The normal medical for an aircrew, I suppose, really. Eyesight was obviously important.
Colour recognition.
Colour recognition, yeah.
Right.
And why did I want to be a pilot, sort of thing? I just said I did. I can't really remember any special reason for it. It went on for about 15 minutes, I suppose, the whole thing. And then after about a couple of hours, I was summoned back and was told I'd been accepted. And I said there were only six of us out of the 33 did. And to go back home again and carry on normally and would be called up in 4 or 5 months. That was in February, I believe, in 1941. And I went back and worked at Fair Oaks. We lived about 3 miles away, and I used to cycle in each day and back again. And then in September 41, I was called up.
What was your parents' reaction to the fact that you'd been selected for pilot?
Well, I think I must have been very pleased. Of course, Father was away most of the time during the war, but Mother was, delighted, I think. She, in the meantime, had gone back to full-time work as a sister in the orphanage in Woking. It was a big, I think it was a British Railway orphanage, but that was taken over as a war emergency hospital, and Mother spent the whole war as a sister in that hospital. Well, Father was in the army.
And so you're in the Home Guard at this time.
Yes.
Do you remember anything interesting in that period before you go off to begin your training?
Quite honestly, no. We used to go out in the evenings, usually about 10 or 11 o'clock, and promenade for about 2 hours, and then I go back home again. When the bells rang, we were all apparently meant to turn out. I hadn't turned out, because I didn't realise we were meant to turn out at all. But so that didn't really matter. And nobody worried very much, really.
And the all clear came through at some point, did it?
Oh, I think by the following morning. Oh, Lord, yes. Yeah, I think by the following morning, or even that evening, I think. It was only a very brief. Somebody pressed the wrong button somewhere.
Or saw the wrong person.
Yeah, that's right.
So, you go off then for your initial training. Let's go on to that. Describe all that process, where you were trained and where you went and how.
Yeah, I remember this a bit better, actually. Well, we went to Leon Solent, the HMS Daedalus, as you may know it's called, but which it was and still was until about 8 or 9 years ago the headquarters of Naval Aviation. But and we did a fortnight there. When we were kitted up with naval gear, we were in bell bottoms, normal able seamen's, but we were with a white thing round our thing, which meant we were cadets training to be officers. And we did the fortnight there, square bashing mostly, and I can't remember much else what we did other than square bashing, really.
And the kind of the recruits that you were with, they were all similar background to you?
More or less, yes. We had a sprinkle of New Zealanders who'd come over. Oh, yes, they were all a similar sort of background. They were indeed.
Grammar school boys and...
Mostly, not essentially, but I would say probably, 4 out of 5 would have been, yes. Maybe even more. And I do remember at the Solent, we had Laurence Olivier and Ralph Richardson, both of which you will doubtless remember, sirs now, who came to talk to us, which was a great thrill, I suppose, but they were both lieutenants, RNVR, and about their flying experiences, which was interesting, yes it was.
Your post has just arrived.
Oh, don't worry about it. If he wants anything, he'll ring the bell, or else he goes around the back door's open, he drops a parcel in there.
Right. No. He just went across, I think.
Yeah.
So they came to talk to you to give you sort of morale-building...
more or less, yeah. I mean, they didn't... they never went overseas, of course, those two, and they were mostly doing acting all the war, but they had got their wings, and I think they were based at Worthy Down, which was near Winchester. And I remember that, and that's about... of course, you weren't allowed to walk across the parade ground either. If you had to go, you had to double across. And woe betide you if a chief PO or PO saw you walking across. Oh, dear me. A very serious offence.
And how did it strike you? I mean, fairly... I mean, it was just something you went through, or it was a...
Well, I was probably lucky, you see, because I'd been a great team player all my life at school. I'd always been in sports sides and that, so I took the discipline of it all. Well, I won't exactly say like a duck to water, but I did, really. I liked it. And we had a fortnight there, and that was really kitting up, and that was it. And then we went to HMS St Vincent, which is in Gosport. It had been a boys' training establishment. A Leon Solnit, of course, had been built in between the wars, so it was relatively modern. This place in Gosport, well, I tremble to think it was nearer Nelson's Dale, I would think, than anything else. But and we had 8 weeks there doing sort of initial groundwork and squad drill, really. We had half a day squad drill each day and half a day's ground school, which covered navigation. We were taken out in whalers to learn how to row a whaler. Well, I look back what that had got to do with flying an aeroplane, I do not know, but however, good for morale, I suppose. And other naval matters, oh, knots and slices, we were quite good on those two.
Were you all training pilots, or were you all...
Oh, yeah, all training
observers
pilots. No, there were separate observer courses. I was number 31 EFTS, no, 31, it was number 31 something of the school there. And it was, well, we slept in the air raid shelters under the parade ground, which were most uncomfortable. I mean, you went down about 16 or 17 narrow steps, and then there were three-tier bunks all stretched along all either side. A lot of the time, and we were never... Oh, that was one night in two, that was. The other night we were on fire duty in one of the office blocks, so we would sleep on the floor or somewhere on a mattress in the office block. So that was every other night.
And were there raids at the time?
No. Portsmouth had been very heavily bombed in 1940, as you will know, but no, by the time we were there, which was autumn 41, there were no raids at all, no. And I suspect for the whole rest of the war, other than and a very occasional bomber once every month, maybe, got one bomb, they weren't raided again, no. But what we did, unbeknown to anybody, was these things under the parade ground were so uncomfortable that quite a number of us went up to our own bunks. We did have a bunk and a locker in one of the rooms, and we used to sleep there, unbeknown to anybody.
But you'd sneak out after everyone was in and go back up there, or just never...
Well, maybe the POs and chief POs knew about it, but chose to give a blind eye. That I don't really know. And we did. It was a very good course there. I mean, it was a very, what is the word, concentrated course. Indeed it was, but the square bashing probably was quite a good thing to lick us into shape. Some of us probably had been in sports teams, maybe didn't need so much as others who were a bit rebellious by nature, maybe, who knows. One thing I do remember, and Ron Creighton will tell you the same thing, I'm sure, that Chief Petty Officer Wilmot, who was in command of the troops under senior officers, obviously, and he was a character in the history of the Free Day Arm, Chief P.O. Wilmot. You may have heard of him before. No, well, you will again. And he was a tremendous character. He was really in charge of the whole lot of us, basically. And we all fell in at about 8 in the morning, I think it was every morning. And he used to come down and announce loudly, you were caught smoking on parade ground. And how we never found out till later in the course that he used to watch us all assembling there, waiting to be fallen in, and he was up in one of his rooms with a little window with a pair of binoculars, looking down on the parade ground to see who he kept smoking.
So he was a martinet, or he was popular?
Oh, he's a martinet, but popular. great expression was "get fell in," which we all used to amuse us, and an enormous voice. He was a huge character. I couldn't swim, but we were all endeavoured to make to swim. I never did, but we were thrown in at the deep end.
Literally?
Oh, literally thrown in, yeah. Well, you either got in or you jumped in or you were thrown in. And where you sort of struggled in a dog paddle for about 5 yards to get to the side of the pool again, when somebody with a big broom, stiff broom, would push you back in again. But had we but known, of course, at that time, any of the POs or chiefs would have drowned themselves rather than let one of the cadets drown, but we didn't know that at the time at all. And Wilmot, though, he went down in history. He really did. He was a huge character.
But, I mean, affectionately, people weren't terrified of him.
Well, not really, no, because he was so over the top. Bit like Blackpool, you know, when I went to once. It's so over the top, it's great. And this was Chief P.O. Wilmot. He was. He's not alive now, but all the way after the war, his name was mentioned over and over again. Or anyway, all the cadets in the Air Branch, we all knew him. Yeah.
What did you actually study then? You studied navigation. I mean, what you said it was a very concentrated course.
Navigation, seamanship, it would have been.
This is a basic grounding in things naval rather than anything to do with...
Other than navigation, it was in really a Navy, yes it was, which looking back on it was probably a very good thing. We didn't perhaps appreciate entirely at the time. We all wanted to fly an aeroplane, but... But I think it probably was a good thing, yes.
Things like etiquette?
No, that came later. No, the bread and butter course came at the Royal Naval College, Greenwich, later on. But
is there anything that particularly sticks out in your mind of that?
From Vincent? I didn't drink beer in those days, if that's any help. We worked quite hard studying. There was a little exam at the end of it on the ground school, and... One thing does most amusing with Chief P.O. Wilmot, because he didn't always take the squad drills, and we were all put in charge of a squad all in turn, which used to terrify me. I really did. But one poor chap, he was in charge of about 50 of us, and he lost his voice through sheer fright, and we were heading towards the main gate. Oh, no, we didn't stop at all, because we all thought, well, you didn't in those days. Until somebody said anything, you just carried straight on. And we went straight through a big flower bed and heading for the main gate. And then an enormous voice from afar called out to this unfortunate cadet, who must be trembling with fright, I think, said, "Well, say something, if it's only goodbye." And then followed by Wilmot in an enormous voice about turn, etc. That sticks in my mind, it does, that one.
Poor man must have thought that he wished the earth would open up beneath his
feet. And another thing I remember was that I developed a bad ingrowing toenail in those days, which went on for a couple of years, in actual fact, after I was commissioned, although it was getting better slowly all the time. I went into the hospital at Gosport for a week, which caused my course to be delayed a little bit, obviously, for an operation. And then I came straight back to work. My mother was utterly horrified when we had one day a week, and I used to travel up by car, by train to Woking, as a nursing sister said, "Well, of course, you'd have been 6 weeks off work," and that was the end of the civilian life. And I used to limp. I couldn't run at all, and with great boots on. And we were running along, I remember, and Petty Officer Howard, he was a splendid chap, came up and said, "What's the matter with you?" I said, "Ingrown toenail, P.O. Oh, fallout." So he had a short chat, and I was then allowed to walk, which was with my big boots instead of run. I'd hardly walk, and then the next thing was they allowed me to wear gym shoes, which was a huge privilege, of course. Oh, I was so grateful.
So it sounds relatively humane when you talk to other people's experience of square bashing. It's foul and there's bullying. This sounds really quite not soft, but I mean, it sounds like
when you look back on it, yes, you realise it was. Whether we did at the time, it didn't worry us. No, it didn't worry us. Well, bear in mind, and I'm not being upmarket or silly when I say this, but we were all from good families and had been used to being at schools where we'd done this type of thing. We mostly played all games and that, where we were under discipline with the captain of the team and that. So we were used to being told what to do, really, yeah.